I feel like I have finally crossed the threshold into the next version of myself very recently, in the past month or two, where it's not my identity has shifted. It's not that my like psyche has shifted. It is a returning and a realigning that is taking place.
Today, we are spending time with Ambika Pai. Oh, Ambika, my soul sister through multiple lifetimes. Ambika and I recorded this episode almost a year ago, and while so much of what we discussed rings true, and I know it will for you too, Ambika's career has continued to expand and evolve to meet her where she's transforming. Today, she is the head of brand at TIAA. Damn! I mean, I can still remember where I was standing in my house when she called to tell me she got the offer. I screamed and I jumped like it was happening to me, because we are unabashed hype women for one another. On the phone, over text, in person, all the places. We travel in this conversation through decades and a multitude of milestones. But the word that stuck with me each of the four times I've listened to this episode is floating. Floating means many things. And while the word is so often viewed as a negative, as in not settled in a definite place, fluctuating or variable, in layman's terms, lost, it also has a positive connotation, buoyant or suspended. This version of the definition usually refers to literally floating in water or through the air, but we are talking about the metaphorical, the existing outside of your body, above yourself, sometimes unsettling, sometimes exhilarating. Yes, being grounded and tethered to the earth is important, but it can also be limiting and hold us back from the expansive, most unbridled versions of ourselves. That kind of floating can take you to places that only exist in your wildest dreams. And it got me thinking, for those of us who are always transforming, evolving, and growing, are we ever not floating? Let's find out.
It would start with us just kind of giggling to ourselves, wouldn't it?
Absolutely.
Oh, Ambika. Here we are. We're here again and again, and I am so deeply grateful and excited for the conversation that we are going to have today. It comes on the heels of our podcast conversation on your podcast,
yes,
Corner Office Breakdowns, which went live last week.
Yes.
And so it's very serendipitous and magical as much of our relationship has been. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just really excited. And I know that we have so much to talk about, and we're going to try to be as focused as we can be while letting things flow as they do, because for you and I, that is where some of the best conversations and epiphanies take place.
Absolutely true.
Amazing. Okay. So what I like to do is start with what I call a hype women headline.
And this I'm already nervous.
Yeah, I know. But that's why I don't send it to you, because I don't want your feedback on it.
Yeah,
And what I know about you and what our listeners should know is that you are an incredibly humble person, and you know, we'll talk about where some of that comes from. Mm-hmm. And additionally, I think you have the reaction that most women do when mm-hmm. hearing positive things said about them: discomfort, unease, and a desire to deflect, and maybe even to counter the truth with, I'm not really sure I did that. There were a lot of people involved. But this is the exercise that we go through in order to decondition from all of that and to start to get comfortable standing in our power. So yes. I have attempted to synopsize into two sentences mm-hmm. your Hype Women headline, which we know is in no possible way going to be as all-encompassing as it needs to be. Mm-hmm. But it's what the external world probably knows you for.
Okay.
And so I'm gonna read it to you. And what I want you to think about mm-hmm. is what's missing.
Okay.
What do we not know about, and what's some of the subtext of what it takes to have achieved what you have? Okay. Take a deep breath and please don't interrupt me when I read this, as I know you will want to.
Closing my eyes and shutting my mouth.
Close those eyes, girl, and just relish in the glow. Ambika Gotham Pai is the mom of two, a C-suite brand and business strategist, and host of The Corner Office Breakdowns, a podcast reconciling humanity and the workplace by breaking down the unspoken rules, deep-seated conditioning, and the cultural expectations that make us feel the big, hard feelings. An author and chief strategy officer, Ambika's award-winning work for the launch of Freedom Mom's breast care line helped to normalize the conversation and challenge around breastfeeding with an ad that debuted on NBC's Golden Globes, becoming the first ever TV commercial to show lactating breasts.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes. These are facts.
Those are facts. Although, this mm-hmm. is not a deflection. The Freedom Mom work was a team.
100%. Absolutely.
But I also do consider it the most meaningful work I've ever done in my life.
What made it the most meaningful work you've ever done in your life?
Advertising. I have to start with advertising. Advertising has been the industry I have been in for my entire career, and yet an industry I feel very conflicted about. And that's been a weird space to live in and try to succeed in and try to find myself in. And what the Freedom Mom work meant to me was suddenly I could do the sort of meaningful, culture shifting, conversation shifting work that I had always wanted to do and will always want to do in my job. And, you know, Mechanism in particular has afforded me more of those opportunities than a lot of other places I have worked. Like, I got to strategize Joe Biden's design identity. I worked on a vaccine hesitancy campaign during COVID that, you know, worked to encourage people from different intersectional groups to get the vaccine and prove out that it was science-based. It wasn't Trump or Big Pharma or any of that. I've worked on campaigns that help reduce sexual assault on college campuses. Like, I finally feel and felt at the time of Frida that I had reached a place where my career and my passion were coinciding. And I hadn't necessarily felt that before. So that's why it is the most meaningful work I've done.
What was your experience with motherhood at that point, when you were working on this launch behind the scenes?
Mm-hmm. Well, Mechanism pitched to get this project. And if you're in client services, you know what that means. While I was on maternity
and
leave.
And we're sorry. We're sorry for everyone that's been through
business
pitches.
Oh my gosh.
It's the trenches.
No joke. But actually, yeah, Mechanism was pitching while I was on maternity leave. And there was a slide at the beginning of the deck that said like fairy godmother or something, like a little thing next to my icon, because I was like, oh my God, I know I'm on maternity leave, but like, this is so exciting. And this is exactly the sort of stuff I want to be working on. They were like, girl, we will handle it when you're back. So bless them for that. But when I came back, you know, I had just had my first baby. I took 4 months of leave, 3 months paid, 1 month unpaid, did not feel like it was enough, but as is our world, and came back to this project where we were talking about baby feeding, not just breastfeeding, baby feeding, how, you know, in the fourth trimester, we strive and struggle to nourish our children. how the first thing any human ever experiences once they are out of the birth canal is being put to their mother's breast, but how fraught the conversation around baby feeding, breastfeeding is, and how lonely it can be, because it's very rare to see the truth reflected anywhere out there. And so I was experiencing the truth myself. I remember around that time I had had a lactation consultant come in. I was having a really hard time breastfeeding, but I wanted to. I felt like I had to. My baby was losing weight. I had severe postpartum depression and anxiety. And to be able to bring that hardship and that struggle into the workplace and somehow talk about it and process it through the lens of my work with my teammates, with other mothers, with, you know, new dads, was, I think, the first time in my life I really felt that my work was my life and my life was my work. And that at every step in my life, I'm going to learn something, and that will be the work of the moment. And how can I bring that sort of thinking into the tangible work, as in the workplace?
Whew. Yes. So much of what you just said is the lived experience of many mothers. Mm-hmm. I only feel that this type of conversation has truly come to the forefront in the past few years. Mm-hmm. I think it's important to recognize that it is the work that you did that starts to shift that conversation in culture, mm-hmm. in media. You and I didn't know one another when that ad came out. Right. I remember that ad viscerally because mm-hmm. it was the first time I had ever seen on TV a depiction of the uncomfortable, dysregulating, mm-hmm. destructive experience of breastfeeding. Mm-hmm. We've always been shown this very ethereal, mm-hmm. beautiful, easy visual of a woman and the child connecting. And so, like you, I also had real trouble breastfeeding both of my kids. Mm-hmm. And it felt like an exercise in self-worth every time Absolutely. That I was failing at. And as a woman who is ambitious and driven and wants to do the best that I can do, it's a really complicated experience because you can only fight your body so long before you have to accept it for what it is.
Yeah, exactly. And we have been so conditioned to prioritize our bodies over our minds to a certain extent. And you know, we push our bodies to a point where our minds are screaming to us to stop, to pause, to reconsider. But we don't, because we expect a certain thing of ourselves, and we know culture and other people expect those things from us as well. And so there's this very strange disconnect and sort of lack of listening that takes place during those early days where you decenter yourself to such an extent through pregnancy, through delivery. Like, it is truly an exercise in kind of like leaving your body in order to keep going. And that definitely happens during the breastfeeding experience. And then, you know, finding yourself again, reconverging with your body and your mind and your soul in this new form after motherhood is something that is really not talked about enough.
It's really not talked about enough. And it's, you know, you talked about the loneliness of breastfeeding, the loneliness of motherhood. Although you are now a part of this collective and this mm-hmm. large swath of individuals across the globe, it is still a very lonely and isolating experience.
It is.
And it is only in the sharing of the experiences that people start to feel seen, that they start mm-hmm. to feel validated. And this is something that you do so beautifully in all of your writing, but most recently and excitingly on Corner Office Breakdowns, mm-hmm. which is where you are truly bringing the conversations that have been hidden in the shadows of the corners of offices mm-hmm. or have been owned by those that sit in corner offices, and you are pushing them to the center and centering people in those conversations. You talked about the expectations that the world has of women when they have birthed a baby and now have this new role. What kind of expectations did you experience and where did they come from?
I think the most shocking expectations were my own. And what felt so shocking about them is, again, they were sort of like disembodied. Like I was like, where did I get the idea in my head that I'm now putting so much pressure on myself about? And so with my daughter, who is my older child, she's three, and then I have an almost one-year-old, which I cannot believe.
No, that's not happening.
I know, I cannot believe he's almost one. But I'm in the like the most beautiful and the most challenging time ever, I feel. And I know more experienced parents are going to like laugh in my face and be like, small kids, small problems, big kids, big problems. And I'm going to be like, oh, fuck off.
No, it's actually like, it's not even, I don't like that phrase because what it does is it, and you and I talk about validation all the time. We talked about it on your podcast, but it invalidates the experience of the individual. And so your experience right now is your experience and it's the only one that you know. And so you aren't going to be able to right now transport yourself 10 years ahead and have perspective that changes what's going on.
And now a pause in the podcast to hype women. Kim Chappell is the chief brand officer of Bobbi, the only mom-led infant formula company founded in the U.S. and the fastest growing in decades. I was so lucky to be in person with Kim down in Austin last month for our Hype Women South by Soiree. 120 badass women coming together to be a part of one another's transformations. And when I tell you that Kim's aura creates a warmth around her that radiates, it's not hyperbole. She draws you in and makes you feel like you are the most important person in the room. That is unsurprising to me because I've witnessed it myself, but also through the work that she's done in her career. Kim recently shared on LinkedIn that on her designer's last day before maternity leave, she promoted her. I was like, what? I've never heard of that happening. I actually cried when I read it. And then I wrote about it. For myself, for the mothers who weren't supported in their workplaces, and for the women who are considering becoming mothers who are afraid. And when I shared my love for Kim and Bobbi and this amazing expression of her leadership on LinkedIn a month ago, guess what? That post has been viewed more than 800,000 times and liked by more than 13,000, many of which are on this podcast listening right now. Since launching in 2018, the team at Bobbi have raised more than $140 million in funding. And they are changing the way not only babies eat, but as I just pointed out, the way mothers thrive. And in 2023, Bobbi purchased infant formula manufacturer Nature's One, allowing it to triple the size of its operations. The deal was part of the company's commitment to invest $100 million to create infant formula access, quality, and options in the U.S. by 2030. The work and impact of Bobbi doesn't begin and end with a formula feeding journey. They are so much more. Find out the full story behind this powerhouse brand at HiBobbi.com. That's HiBobbi.com. Now, back to our show.
So you are in the shit at the moment.
Yes.
And it's really fucking hard.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, like, Erin, you've been in this similar but different scenario because, yes, every individual's experience is different. But, like, working a full-time job, having passions that live outside that full-time job that still kind of like make your heart sing and that you don't want to let go of because they are part of your identity and what fulfills you. Having children, having a partner, having a home, having a pet, like whatever, it is so much. It is just so much. And, you know, my grandmother in India, who is coming to my house, and she's going to stay with us in Chicago for a night, like on Tuesday.
Oh my gosh.
Oh my gosh. I truly, my heart is overcome. My grandfather just passed. And so it's just such a, I'm so blessed to be able to like have her in my home with my kids. And anyways, tangent, but she said to me one day, she was like, oh, Ambika, you know, you have it so much harder than any of us ever did. And I was like, what? I was like, you grew up in like oppressive India. Women had no say in anything that happened. The home was the woman's realm and the outside world was the man's realm. And that was that. And how can you say that what I'm experiencing is harder than what you're experiencing? And I sat with that for a really long time. And it was so validating once I truly internalized it, because, you know, I do think our generation of women is experiencing something so unprecedented, so challenging, and in such a multifaceted way that we almost don't even know what we're experiencing yet. Like, we are just living and seeing what every day feels like, but we are dealing with everything all at once as these, you know, little people in the cosmos. And so I think, you know, we have expectations that are put on us and absorbed within kind of like our bodies and our DNA from like our ancestors about the role of a woman and the role of a man and the fact that a woman births. And so what else could her role be? And seeing that as, you know, inferior somehow to the hunting and gathering and money making and all of that other stuff that the flip side does. And so, yeah, the expectations are ingrained in us to the point where I was like, these are my own expectations I am enforcing on myself. And I had to really kind of decouple what felt right versus what my brain was telling me was right, because they were very different things.
They were very different. You're experiencing the conditioning, mm-hmm. not only of your own individual family of origin and family of creation, but also mm-hmm. societally what we're told about women.
Yes.
And I think it's a really critically important point to talk about the evolution of women's roles in and out of the home, in careers, mm-hmm. over the past 50 plus years, because we didn't give anything up. We just took more on.
Yes, exactly.
And I think many of us have reached a breaking point. Mm. You and I both have experienced postpartum mm-hmm. depression and anxiety, and that is one of the many symptoms that come from really the exponential weight of responsibility mm-hmm. of being all of those people that you just listed out that you are. Mm-hmm. But I think the question is, to what end? Mm. To what end do we continue to push through? And when do we decide that we really aren't going to ever be able to fully experience any of these roles individually mm-hmm. until we recognize and acknowledge that we can't be doing all of these things mm. continuously? Neha sent me mm-hmm. something earlier, obviously, right?
This, yeah, of course.
Of course. Like, and it's like, she didn't know that you and I were talking, but like, of course, because that's what Neha does.
She is on the vibe, like she is on the cosmic universal vibe at all times. Like her sensors are just going off in every direction and she follows them and she's like, oh, Aaron needs this today. And it's like exactly what you need.
I literally wrote, like, she is the universe's AI. Like, that's what... Okay. So...
That's
hey,
so good.
Hey, girl. I know you're listening. Hey. So Neha sent me this quote. Many of us never had space for joy in our pursuit to stay strong. Mm-hmm. And so when you think about what we just talked about with mm-hmm. pushing through going back to work before we're ready, pushing through the breastfeeding and the sleepless nights, being the best mother that we have always thought we were going to be, being the devoted wife and loyal friend and all of the roles. Mm-hmm. All of this is about service. Mm-hmm. All of this is about output. All of this is about showing up externally. Mm-hmm. When the hell do we have time for joy?
Oh, zero. What? 0%.
What is that?
It goes even deeper than that. It's not only that we don't have time to experience joy, it's like we don't know how to experience joy. Like literally, Erin, like I'm like, okay, joy. That time I took 5 tequila shots. That time I was like at a party and the music was really loud and I literally couldn't think of anything else. Or like, oh, when I was sleeping the other day, you know, like
right.
Accessing joy and the link between us and the very fundamental human sentiment of just like joyfulness and exuberance. Like we have lost that connection. I don't even know how to tap into it anymore.
When you talk about connection, mm-hmm. and we think back to what we talked about a few minutes ago, disassociation,
yeah.
we have had to exit our bodies in mm-hmm. order to push through,
yeah.
to stay strong, to be resilient.
Yeah.
And so, of course, it's difficult to connect because we maybe haven't even really fully come back into ourselves.
Oh, yeah.
Into our bodies to really understand, feel, and know. And so do you feel like you have come back into your body yet? Or are you still floating?
Ooh, I love this question. I'm floating, but it's a good float because I feel like I have finally crossed the threshold into the next version of myself very recently in the past month or two where it's not my identity has shifted. It's not that my like psyche has shifted. It is a returning and a realigning that is taking place. So I'm inching slowly back towards myself, but it's not the self that I was a year or 2 years or 3 years or 4 years ago. It is truly the self I was when I was like 9, which was my favorite age randomly. Like 9 was just, it was a moment in time for me where I was really happy. And, you know, I was the sort of girl who would like have a flashlight under the covers and be reading and like, oh my God, I wrote some very embarrassing stuff, but I was like a writer from day one and imaginative and, you know, like hiding in my closet, playing all these games, like, you know, and then for the last 30-ish years, I've kind of siphoned off that quote unquote, like weird version of myself when actually there's nothing weird about her. She's this beautiful, curious, experimenting little girl. And I'm feeling myself moving more and more into that space of curiosity, of life can be an adventure. The unknown doesn't have to be terrifying. It can be liberating. And so I have not returned to my body. My body and I are still very disconnected. But I am returning to Ambika in a way that is very different than I expected and far more profound than I expected.
I'm really glad that we have what you just said recorded so that you can hear.
You're like, girl.
I'm like, I gotta lay down because
Oh my God.
The healing that you are experiencing, mm-hmm. the reparenting of the younger version of yourself. Mm. Age 9 for young girls is really important. It's not a coincidence that that is your favorite age, and here is why.
Really?
As Glennon Doyle writes in her book Untamed,
yes,
10 is when we learn to be good girls and real boys. 10 is when children begin to hide who they are in order to become what the world expects them to be.
Oh, shit.
So when we think about your experience, you know, as a child of immigrant parents mm-hmm. and being so often the only brown girl in spaces, mm-hmm. especially spaces of education
yes.
in those formative years.
Yes.
There was a freedom to that Ambika that got closed off mm-hmm. after the age of 9. Mm-hmm. That you are going back and saying, I want you to come back. Mm-hmm. I want you to still be here. You deserve to be here. I don't want you to disappear anymore.
Yeah.
I think so many women begin to disappear when they become mothers because, and you said this earlier, it is all about the baby. It is yeah. all about what we are required to do to make sure that that baby gets everything that it needs. Mm-hmm. No one is asking about the mother.
Yeah.
And it's completely absurd to me that the first appointment that we have is 6 weeks after having a baby. Mm-hmm. I remember calling my doctor at 4 weeks saying, I'm really struggling. I don't think I can make another 2 weeks before I talk to someone. Mm-hmm. But that, again, the onus is put on people that are in really dark places.
Yeah.
And so what's so beautiful about what you said and about what's happening for you is that you are remembering the version of yourself that existed unabashedly. Mm-hmm. What is she teaching you right now when you go back and you visit her and you, mm-hmm. you love her and you guide her?
Mm-hmm. Well, okay. Well, I have to say something first. And the only reason I'm even talking about this is because you're such a good friend of mine. Like, I almost like can't believe I'm saying this in this public, eventually public of a setting. But when I started doing inner child work, if you will, little Ambika, this is so hard to even talk about. And it's so sad. She was like in a cave in dirty clothes with matted hair, like literally crouched over, like hugging her knees. And I could hardly get her to lift her head. Like, she was abandoned. And the way I felt when I saw her as like a grown woman who has a daughter now, and I've seen that unbridled, you know, enthusiasm for life. Like, you know, just last night, for no reason, she was like, today is the best day. Oh, like, it was that. It was honestly having my daughter where I was like, she's just like me. Like, I saw myself in her and I was like, who could not fucking love that little girl? And I felt so devastated by how she had been unloved that I was like, I have to love her. And that is what it took for me to really realize that little Ambika was worthy of love. And I think once she woke up, she then helped me, adult Ambika, by being like, wow, I'm so proud of you. Like, this is insane, girl. But like, you're not happy. And it's been really difficult. Like, I'm not going to sit here and say like this all just like came to me one night. And I'm also not going to sit here and say like I had a breakdown. Well, I've had multiple.
I mean,
thus corner office breakdowns.
Only my best of friends had multiple breakdowns.
Oh, yeah. Breakdowns happened. But I think that is, you know, I wouldn't say I feel more joyful than I have, but there is a peace within me and a trust in myself that has... I don't feel like I cultivated it. I feel like it was cultivated in me that I want everyone to have, that has clarified so much in my life that has all of a sudden made my intuition like turn back on with a vengeance. Like my intuition was like, nope, yes, nope, yes. And it's allowing me to live my life in both a very different but very familiar way. And I'm loving it.
And now, a pause in the podcast to hype women. Vitaly Buford Hardin is the visionary force, recovering perfectionist, and resident hype woman behind Vitaly and Company. With a track record of revolutionizing workplaces, Vitaly is not your typical consultant. She's a trailblazer who's led not one, but two groundbreaking university research studies uncovering the pervasive grip of perfectionism in today's organizations. And guess what? It's not just talk. Organizations in every industry have experienced firsthand the power of Vitaly's approach. Her journey isn't just about corporate success. It's also about personal triumph. Overcoming her own battles with perfectionism and addiction fueled her drive to author her 2020 memoir, Addicted to Perfect. This led to Vitaly becoming a nationally featured speaker and IPEC certified executive coach. Now, armed with authenticity and resilience, she's on a mission to empower others to do the same. And trust me, y'all, I've seen it firsthand. I was so lucky to be with Vitaly in person at a Chicago Fairway dinner that she flew in for 6 months pregnant. Damn, women are freaking amazing. And I was honored to feature her memoir, Addicted to Perfect, in our inaugural Hype Women Book Collective, which launched on International Women's Day last month. Check out Vitaly's book and the full lineup on hypewomen.com. And if you or your colleagues are tired of cookie-cutter training programs and are ready for a bespoke solution that resonates with your organization's soul, whoo, baby, you can learn more about Vitaly and Company's signature workshops, training, and keynotes at vitalyandco.com. That's VitalyandCo.com. Now, back to our show. You said before that you're floating right now, but it's a good float. Mm. And I think so often the misconception mm-hmm. of floating is disconnection mm-hmm. and maybe even ambivalence or apathy. Mm-hmm. But what mm-hmm. it sounds like is that you are more present. You yeah. are watching what's happening and you're yeah. there for it. Mm-hmm. And you are seeing that younger, age 9 and younger, Ambika, and you are telling her that she's safe and yeah. it's okay. And you've got her and you're going to walk with her. Inner child work is the most, in my opinion, it's the most important work for us to heal. Mm. And it is our responsibility as parents to do.
I agree. And as leaders.
As leaders. As leaders.
Yes.
There is a recent, it could have been an HBR mm-hmm. or New York Times piece about empathy being the number one trait that the leaders of the future need to have.
Yeah.
And for me, when I hear that, it is equal parts comforting to know that mm-hmm. that is, you know, what has been positioned as a soft skill. Mm-hmm. And many times, many of us that are very empathetic people have been told we are too emotional.
Oh, yeah.
And we feel too much and we care too much. Mm-hmm. So there is something that's very encouraging about it, but it's also really concerning because mm-hmm. I don't see very many empathetic leaders currently mm-hmm. in charge.
Yeah.
How are you challenging the notion of leadership?
I think in little ways, it is like the lens through which I'm living. And it's not intentional challenging. Like, it's not like I wake up every day and say, like, what am I going to fuck with today?
You know? Why are you looking at me when you say that? And why are you being hurtful?
I looked away. My eyes went somewhere
else. Please roll the tapes. I'd like to see that in slow-mo.
Hey, look. I have all the fucking respect in the world for people who do that. That is not how I am as a human. Like, I actually am far more submissive and quiet, and I'm a thinker. I'm a strategist. I'm a writer. Like, I am a behind the scenes sort of person naturally. Like, that is my natural, most comfortable state. But I can no longer go with the grain, because I got to a point where it was so uncomfortable, I felt like I was crawling out of my skin. And in my book, which I'm just going to say, my forthcoming book.
That's right.
At some point.
I don't know if you heard in the Hype Woman headline, you are an author.
I heard.
And it's going to be published author in our part two.
But I have this reframe of imposter syndrome. And it'll come back to the empathy thing as well. I have a reframe of imposter syndrome. And we talk about imposter syndrome as us entering an environment and feeling like we don't belong there. But what I actually think imposter syndrome is, it's when we enter in an environment being imposters to ourselves. We enter an environment and we're like, code switch, morph, turn this part on, turn this part off, change the way you speak. Like, oh, make sure you're wearing something like this and not that. Sit in the middle of the room, not the front, but also not the back. Like, the amount of mental calculation that it takes to fit in to a very, very singular definition of success that is patriarchal, white, you know, nepotistic. I don't even know if that's a word, but I hope it is, you know, today. What I'm saying. Mm-hmm. Nobody fits into that. And then we sit here and we're like, we all want more diverse leadership. And it's like, okay, first of all, I don't believe you. But second of all, say that was true. In order to get more diverse leadership, we need to fundamentally change what leadership is, what it looks like, what it sounds like, what it acts like, and how we then teach other people what leadership is. Because all I ever learned about leadership was from the men, the older white men. Every book I saw on leadership, older white men, even if it's something as like eloquent as Starts With Why. And, you know, there are amazing male leaders out there. Like, I fucking love Adam Grant. Like, there are people who are shifting what leadership means, but there are people who are trying to radically shift what leadership means who are not being heard because they're radically different. And so to me, everything I do, unfortunately, is almost like an act of defiance, but not because that's my intention, not because I'm a bull in a china shop, but because I am just so inherently different and I can no longer live in a way that is inauthentic to me.
When did that happen? What was that moment for you where you decided that you had to fully show up as yourself, regardless of the expectation of the space that you were entering?
I think the most tangible moment was after having kids. Like, honestly, I was on, well, also, and not to like take it there again, because I have talked about this enough, but like the rejection with the book, you know, I think it was twofold. It was, I got so many rejections about the book, and it was like, oh, wow, this topic is so interesting. We really actually like the writing. Like, your writing is beautiful. I connect so much. But like, who are you? As you know, Erin. And it was that who are you question that I really struggled with, because I was like, well, have you asked the thousands of white men who have written books on leadership who they are? And I'll tell you who I am. I'm not a nobody. Yes, I don't have 100,000 followers on Instagram, but that's because that's not where I've put my energy in my life. I've been doing other things. And I think that, like, oof, that turned off the, like, docile Imbica, and it made me fucking mad. And then simultaneously, I've just had my second baby. And again, that feeling of something is trying to claw its way out of you. Like, something is like, it is there and it just wants to be expressed. And so I was like, fuck it. I'm going to say what is on my mind. And I had been doing it like delicately, and I had been doing it more about things like motherhood and postpartum and not connecting it to anything overarchingly societal or workplace oriented. And then I was like, nah, like we need to start calling a spade over That's here. Right. And so I think it was those two things. And I remember, you know, I was sitting out on my balcony. My son was like 2 months old, and I was like feeling very devastated about the book stuff. And I was like, you know what? I don't care. I don't care how it comes out. I don't care about these people saying, who are you? I'm just going to start putting some things out there because, again, like I have to or I will explode. And that's where Corner Office Breakdown started. And so the minute I just kind of let myself be who I was and let myself say what I needed to say, it crystallized very quickly. And it turned into something tangible very quickly.
I think when people are meant to do something and they say that and they put it out into the world takes notice. The world sits up and takes notice. Mm-hmm. It is an act of courage to do it, though, because it's incredibly vulnerable to share not only your personal experience, but your perspective with a large group of people. What we know about that is it invites a lot of critique and feedback, so often from those that we are not even looking to get it from. Mm-hmm. And so we have to be really clear and intentional about who we are even allowing to have that access to us and whose opinions matter.
Exactly. Right? Exactly.
Whose opinions matter. And I think what you started to recognize, and again, that connection to yourself, your truest self, that younger version of yourself, you started to recognize how much she matters, mm-hmm. how much your intuition means to your own life. Mm-hmm. Women's intuition is the most powerful, magical gift mm-hmm. that we have in the world. And women's anger is the most powerful emotion. Mm. And so you mentioned both of those things coming back to you in the past few months when mm-hmm. you have really felt like you've come back into yourself. Mm-hmm. You're reconnecting, you're realigning, recalibrating, redefining so much of who you've been. Mm-hmm. And I think so often women are told not to be angry mm-hmm. because it's not ladylike and it's uncomfortable. But in reality, we have a lot to be angry about in the world right now. Mm-hmm. And so we do need to feel those feelings. And in the best of cases, that anger actually turns into action.
Yes.
And then we solve the world's problems. So I just think that there's something really powerful about the anger and the intuition that is mm-hmm. happening for you, that is happening for so many women during this real evolution and revolution that women are going through. Mm-hmm. And this moment of transition for you as you are truly thinking about kind of what's next. Mm-hmm. I want to do an exercise with you. It's three phrases mm-hmm. that I would love you to fill in the blank on. You may have done this at a fairway dinner.
Ooh, okay. I have my fairway notebook right here.
Oh, okay. Well, that's exciting. And it's not something for you to overthink. Mm. And it honestly, I would guess mm-hmm. that like it's probably different than if you did this exercise a month or two ago. I think yes. it's going to be a very different answer.
I think so.
And so I'm going to say the sentences, and then I want you to say them back and to fill them in with what feels most right for you right now. It can be a word. It can be a few words. It can be a few sentences for each. Mm-hmm. But we're really looking at your metamorphosis, this true, beautiful transformation that you are experiencing, mm-hmm. that you are like at the precipice of something exceptional. And I'm just grateful to be along for the ride. So the phrases are, I was, I am, I will be.
Mm-hmm. I was, a shapeshifter. I was an actress who had to perform her way into being seen and who had to make herself palatable to a palate she had never understood. I am enlivened, happy, at peace, and terrified. And I will be the truest version of myself I could ever be.
We are here and ready for it. And if that's not what I'm already seeing, then we are in for something really, really fucking great. And I think I'm
getting there.
I have seen this shift in you. Mm-hmm. I have seen the shift in you.
Yes, and, you have.
And girl, it's work. It is deep work. This is not by chance or because of inertia. Mm-hmm. It is because you are doing really introspective work, and you also are so deeply empathetic in the way that you lead and make people feel seen out in the world. I don't think you even know the power that you do have on people's lives when you share your own lived experience and they feel less alone. So please continue to do that and continue to use and share your voice in all the ways that you do through every medium possible, because we didn't even know that the writing could be better when it was actually coming straight from your mouth and we were listening to you having conversations, and it's a gift.
Thank you.
How can we support you? What is your ask, your call to action for where you are currently and where you want to go?
This is where I need the most. This is where my next education needs to be. It is in reteaching myself how to ask for support, because I don't know. And it makes me very uncomfortable almost.
Is it that you don't know what you want, or that you feel like it's an imposition to ask someone to help you get it?
Both. I think I don't know what I want tangibly or literally, but I know how I want to feel. And what I want to feel is respected. I want to feel as if I don't have to prove myself in every room, but I'm just approached with a sense of mutual acknowledgement. I want to be surrounded by the sort of people, just like you, Erin, who genuinely from the bottom of their heart want to make the world a better place and want to bring other people along on that journey. And I mean, for fuck's sake, I want to get my book published.
I mean, we got to get the book published.
That's
tangible and tactical right there.
That. But I want to do it in a way that where I'm not an imposter to myself. I want to do it in a way that is like allows me to strip the facade even more. I don't want to do it through the lens of like turning myself into this influencer in the way. And no fucking judgment. I love many influencers. I think a lot of them do incredible work, and everybody's an influencer in their own right. But I don't want the numbers to speak for me. I want to speak for myself. So yeah, I think that's it.
I think that we all need so much of what you talked about, the feeling piece that resonates with me so deeply. And I think, you know, as you get older and you, if you decide to have children, or you're just at a point in your life where you're looking back and looking forward at the same time, you realize how time is not guaranteed. And you really want to be conscious and conscientious about who you are spending that time with, where you are putting your energy, who you are giving access to. And so I really think that was a beautiful way to share how we all want to feel. The ask is a good one, and it's one that we need anyone listening to this to take and run with, because once this book is out in the world, it will speak for itself. Mm-hmm. And we have to stop using old algorithms to churn out new leaders and ideas. Mm-hmm. It is the definition of insanity. If we keep doing the same thing and expecting different results, we will continue to be disappointed. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so I know and hope that there are amazing publishers out there who are doing things differently and who are recognizing that the voices of incredible individuals like you need to be shared with the masses. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we gon' get that published. So we're going to do that. That's just like check, check. And then we'll deal with like, no, the healing is going to, we're going to, we just have to keep doing that work.
Yeah. And if there's one thing I know about you and I is that we always fucking pay it forward. Like, this is not actually about you and I as individuals. This is about our community, our people, our sisterhood. You know, there is something very significant bubbling under the surface of the world right now. And it is us. And we're seeing cracks. We haven't quite busted through. But you know, like the minute a few of us start busting through, that creates the pathway for everyone else. So you, if you are somebody who has busted through, I believe it is your responsibility and your duty as a universal energy to bring others along. Like, what are we if not one part of a whole together? This is not a world where it benefits us to be selfish and self-serving and individualistic. And I think America brings that out in most people. Like, we are a very individualistic culture and society, but it doesn't have to be that way. And I think we all could use more support and nurturing and feeling held and seen. And so that's actually, I hope that's what people also take away from this, is like, you can help others in your own way too. And that should just be a lens through which we all look at our work, our life's work.
It will be in some cases small, and in other cases it will be very big, but it all matters. Mm-hmm. And like you've said, it's the collective.
Yeah.
And so thank you for being a part of this collective energy, this really important conversation, and for continuing to do the work to make the world a better, more equitable place for our children, but also for us right now. Mm-hmm. We deserve it. We've earned it. And I'm so deeply grateful to have you in my life. You're my sister for life. I love you.
Thank you. Thank you, Erin.
Thank you, Ambika. Till next time. Thank you for spending time with us today. We hope you feel motivated, inspired, and fired up to take on and burn down that patriarchy. We can't wait to see you again next time. Until then, please do your part to hype women. The Hype Women podcast is produced by Erin Gallagher and Melanie Scroggins. Original score by Alex Yuan. Please listen, subscribe, and rate our show wherever you listen to podcasts the most.